Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, the most listened to internet radio show in the nonprofit sector, dedicated to helping your charity succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to modern-day fundraising success, and practical advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect landing point to learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books range from successful online fundraising to the use of social media and how to make your nonprofit green. Guests on The Nonprofit Coach are leaders in their field who share tips and trade secrets for nonprofit management and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you and your organization move to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. This is a live call-in show. Add your voice by calling 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Click on Radio. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of The Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
And welcome here to the latest edition of The Nonprofit Coach. Thank you for joining me today. This is your host, Ted Hart. I'm coming to you live from the national headquarters of the Charities Aid Foundation of America. And we've got a big show for you today, a very important show that helps all of us as leaders understand the scope and breadth and what is happening in the U.S. charitable giving sector. And our guest here on The Nonprofit Coach today will be Rob Mitchell. As always here on Nonprofit Coach, we start with Page One News. Over here on Page One News, just to draw your attention to the Chronicle of Philanthropy today, leading with an article about the new budget put forward by President Barack Obama that would limit charitable deductions. We've seen this before, and of course, anyone who knows anything about Washington, D.C., these things do not often go far, but we do want to make sure that you stay on top of that issue as it moves forward to make sure that we do maintain the charitable deduction here in the United States. Also, just a programming note for you. Today, as always, you can join us over in the chat room. And I do see some folks over in the chat room, so feel free to ask questions there. As the announcer mentioned, this is a live call-in show, so you should feel free to call in and ask questions by dialing 347-324-3080. You can also ask me questions at tedhart.com here on the show. So our guest here on the Nonprofit Coach for our Page 2 expert, we're going to jump right into it. Rob Mitchell is the CEO of the Atlas of Giving, which is the topic of our show today. Rob is one of the most successful and experienced fundraising professionals here in the United States, joining many of us who have been around for many decades as a working fundraiser, nonprofit leader, and an innovator. He's also an expert in the mechanics of charitable giving economy here in the United States. That's important for our discussion here today. As Rob participates in the entire spectrum of modern fundraising, he has an appreciation for how fundraising is put together, and then now with the Atlas of Giving to give us some insight. And a lot of people are maybe a little bit more familiar with the Giving USA report, which has been around for a long time, and I've often been asked the difference between the two. And I think just as the financial markets have many analysts and many opportunities to look at that sector from a variety of different viewpoints, I think there is more than enough room and more than enough need for both the Atlas of Giving and the Giving USA report, because they look at our sector in slightly different ways, and certainly the analysis that's available from both is, I think, very valuable. And particularly my suggestion to my listeners is to consider both and to look at the entire spectrum of fundraising as you're making your plans for the year ahead, which is why we invited Rob Mitchell back here on the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show. So welcome back, Rob Mitchell.
Thanks, Ted. It's good to be with you. Always good.
Well, we really appreciate you coming and joining each year here on the Nonprofit Coach to share with us your insights, which are very substantial. You have a team of 25 PhD-level mathematicians, analysts, and statisticians that evaluate dozens of possible variables and their interactions with charitable giving outcomes for over four decades. And then from that, each year you and your team do your analysis, and then you publish the Atlas of Giving. So today we're here to talk about United States Charitable Giving 2014 results and initial 2015 forecast. And I understand, Rob, the story that you're going to paint for us today is one of genuinely good news and a cautionary tale.
It is good news. The good news is that 2014 was another good year, great year for giving. By our estimate, giving totaled more than $450 billion to all causes in 2014, and that is up 9.3% from last year, from 2013, when the total was almost $418 billion.
A 9.3% increase is something that almost any organization would be pleased to see in their fundraising. That's a lot of money. Can you break down for us why you feel that that happened? What were some of the contributing factors?
Well, there were significant contributing factors, and Ted, it might be beneficial to the listeners to know how we analyze the charitable giving economy and arrive at our numbers. As you mentioned earlier, we took originally more than four decades worth of published annual giving data, turned it over to our team of 25 researchers and analysts. We gave them our hypothesis when we started was that giving is directly related to specific factors in the economy, demographics, and events. So we gave our team more than 75 variables to test to determine if there were indeed correlations, and what this is generally called is correlation science, correlations among these factors and specifics of the charitable giving economy. And in fact, there were. So what we were able to determine is what those factors were and what their relative strengths were. And now we have, from that, we've developed 65 specific algorithms that are based on those factors. So there are algorithms for each of nine sectors: health, education, religion, the arts, the environment, et cetera. Four sources of gifts: individuals, foundations, corporations, and bequest. And all 50 states plus DC. So each one of those algorithms, the factors and the strength of those factors can be considerably different. One example that I would give you is comparing and contrasting two sectors. One would be religion or churches primarily, where most of their giving is small gifts by individual donors, as opposed to, say, college and university in the giving in the education sector, where many of those gifts are campaign gifts or made out of assets. And the things the factors that matter in each of those two separate algorithms are quite different. So to get back to your question, the things that made a difference, one thing that made a huge difference and has over the last 4 years in giving is the ramp up in the American stock market. It's had a tremendous success, even with when unemployment was really a problem for us. The stock market continued to do well, and that doesn't affect every organization in their giving, but it affects some of the organizations in a very dramatic way. So So I would say that the stock market was a huge factor. The other thing that we noted is that over the last 12 years, the number of nonprofits in the United States has continued to increase. And in fact, it's up over the last 12 years, 50%. So the more organizations that are out there asking, it makes a difference. Technology makes a difference. We've got new technologies in fundraising, as you well know and report on regularly, that make fundraising more effective and more efficient at a reduced cost. And so those factors are huge have been huge in showing these kinds of increases. There are other things that have made a difference in 2014, as your listeners are well aware. Employment increased in 2014, and that does make a difference. The interesting thing that we've noted is that when people fear becoming unemployed, or they are unemployed, or just recently reemployed, they don't give. They have suspended their giving, and it takes as many as 2 years after people become reemployed for them to resume giving at their previous levels. So any improvement in employment is a big boost to the individual source component of giving, which, as you well know, is by far the largest source of gifts in the United States, currently 74%.
You've got a lot of statistics in there, so I want to back up if we can, and I want to thank you for giving that sort of summary of the details that you have. Going back to the algorithms, going back to what you have determined are some of those triggers for your analysis. What are some, and I know that you have a lot of them so far, Jermaine, and we actually cover on this show, but what are some of the key indicators that you look for and that your statisticians look for that then get put into the overall mix that becomes the Atlas of Giving?
They're varied, and as I say, they're different for each of the 65 formulas, but they include things like gross domestic product. Anyone who's been around fundraising for any length of time has recognized that there is a relationship between real GDP and giving, and that is true in many of our algorithms. Excuse me. In low inflation, when people are not struggling, when inflation is low, they have more to give. Pardon me. And same thing on interest rates. We're experiencing historically low interest rates when people are borrowing money for major items like homes and cars and appliances. When interest rates are low, they're paying less, they have more to give. Things like gas prices make a difference. And some of the correlations that we've noted don't necessarily indicate a relationship, but they're very interesting. And one example that I would give you is that there is a strong relationship in corporate giving to auto parts sales. Now, that is not to imply that auto parts sales drive corporate giving. They don't. I think any reasonable person would recognize that. But what we find interesting is that as auto part sales go, so does corporate giving to a degree. There are other factors, of course, in the corporate giving algorithm, but so it's a wide variety of things. And I think one of the things that's interesting to think about if you're a practitioner or a nonprofit leader is anything that is providing more discretionary income on the part of the donor is a good sign for giving. Whether that's lower gas prices, as we're experiencing now, low inflation, low interest rates, better corporate profits, any of those kinds of things that create discretionary income for individual donors, corporate donors, foundation donors, those things make a difference.
And as people are making decisions to give, and certainly that, as you said, fuels much of a 9.3% increase over 2013 because individual donors account for 74% of U.S. giving. is an attack on the tax deductibility or a restriction on the tax deductibility of contributions likely to change those numbers in the future, or have we seen any indication that the threat to change that formula changes people's willingness to give?
I've seen no evidence that the threat would change anything. It's important to note that of all American taxpayers, fewer than 30% file an itemized return and claim a charitable deduction. So
of that 30%, what percentage of the 74% of overall giving does that represent? Is it a high? It may be a small percentage of overall taxpayers, but does it represent a larger percentage of individual giving?
It does, and your question is spot on, because the kinds of people who do itemize and deduct their charitable gifts tend to make, first of all, they're in higher tax brackets and they tend to make larger gifts. So they absolutely, it's a disproportional amount. In fact, one of the things that we've noted over the last few years is that about 1% of all charitable giving in this charitable giving economy is accounted for by gifts of $100,000 or more.
Say that again.
About 1% of all charitable giving in the U.S. is accounted for by individual gifts of $100,000 or more.
Is that to say, if I'm understanding correctly, that 99% of gifts made in the United States are less than $100,000?
No, that would not necessarily be the right characterization, but it is to say that the people who make very large gifts make a very big difference in the charitable giving economy. And, you know, there's another trend that we've noted that's very important in the charitable giving economy and is often lost on practitioners, and that's been the tremendous growth in donor-advised funds, especially since the recession. And the three biggest are Fidelity Charitable, Vanguard Charitable, and Schwab Charitable. And by our calculations, gifts into those funds and grants out of those funds in 2014 accounted for over 6.8% of all charitable giving in the United States.
Well, we've certainly seen that here at CAF America. CAF America, of which I serve as CEO, is a donor-advised fund. We're the international donor-advised fund here in the United States. And as interest in international has grown, so has CAF America's donor-advised fund.
And it's interesting because, as you well know, donor-advised funds by some in our sector are under fire. People are upset that money can go into a donor-advised fund for an indefinite period of time before it is granted to other nonprofits. But I would argue that the cumulative effect of growth in the donor-advised funds and their effect over a long period of time, not just this year or next year, is a tremendous benefit to our giving economy. And in fact, there's very real data that shows that small private foundations are now transferring their assets into donor advised fund for ease of managing those things. And so that's working well. And I believe we're picking up new donors who are willing to make gifts into a donor advised fund because they feel like they have a modicum of control that they don't have when they make a gift necessarily outright. And it gives them time to think, research, and determine how they'd like their gifts, the grants from their funds to go.
Well, I can absolutely tell you that you are correct. As someone who runs a donor advised fund, we see that in people who come to us. Of course, they're making the gift to the donor advised fund. They are then advising gifts. And what we find is that that capacity to make the gift and then sit back and be strategic and thoughtful in how you want to advise the gift, to be thoughtful about what you're looking to do with those funds, is, I think, a very important benefit of donor-advised funds, that giving directly to a charity who is then using the funds doesn't give that time for reflection. And oftentimes, as we know, end of year giving, people are sort of under the gun in wanting to make their gifts at year end, and sometimes they're not able to do that as thoughtfully as they're able to do through a donor advised fund. And statistics show that a higher percentage of funds actually go in and out of a donor advised fund than they do through a private foundation.
It's a very good point, and a reason that I'm a very big proponent of the donor advised fund concept.
Well, we appreciate you being a friend to donor advised funds, because I agree with you. I think it is part of the overall growth, because we are in an economy and in a time where donors want to be more impactful. They want to be more hands-on. They want to be more strategic and thoughtful in their giving, and the donor advised fund gives them that framework to legally be able to do that and to be more thoughtful. We're going to take a very quick break, Rob, and then when you come back, you mentioned a few of the contributing factors, one of the largest being improvement in the employment picture here in the United States that helped drive that 9.3% growth. But I want to get into some of the other contributing factors when we come back, and we will be right back after this break.
Does your organization have a compelling story to tell? Do you want to connect with your supporters, volunteers, and donors, but don't have the funds to launch expensive outreach campaigns? The YouTube Nonprofit Program can help.
If I could give one piece of advice, it would be sign up for the YouTube Nonprofit Program. If I could give another piece of advice, it would just be to capture the story of your organization and use video to tell it, because video is the most powerful medium by far.
The Nonprofit Program helps you use YouTube as a powerful fundraising tool for your organization.
In one weekend, we managed to raise enough to feed 500,000 children at school for one day. The video also gained over 500,000 views and had thousands of comments.
And tell stories that haven't been told.
Because you guys, the YouTube community, started sharing these videos, there's been housing programs started and feeding programs started. Literally, homeless people that were sleeping outside slept inside last night because of you guys.
Over 10,000 nonprofits are already using YouTube's premium tools for nonprofits. Your organization can too. Learn more and apply at www.youtube.com/nonprofits.
Programming note here on the Nonprofit Coach. Next week, we will be live here on the Nonprofit Coach, as always, at 12 noon Eastern. Our guests will be Linda Lysakowski and Lynn Dean, and they are going to be speaking to us about nonprofit strategic planning. Very important topic. Very excellent experts that are going to be joining me here on the Nonprofit Coach. So please mark your calendar and join us next week here on the Nonprofit Coach. And we're going to be head right back to the show, and Rob Mitchell, CEO of the Atlas of Giving, here on the Nonprofit Coach.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
And we're back here live with Rob Mitchell. Rob, there are other contributing factors to this terrific growth, 2014 over 2013, beyond the improvement in the employment picture. What else contributed?
As a couple of things that I previously mentioned, Ted, that are big. Historically low interest rates create more money for people to more discretionary income, so more people have more to give. Low levels of inflation is very important. a strengthening economy in 2014, and we, as anybody who follows with the GDP knows, we had mixed results in GDP in each quarter, but it's been better than it's been in past years, and we can only hope that in 2015 that continues in terms of charitable giving. One of the things that I think is important to remember is, especially for practitioners who are listening, is that these factors, these big economic factors, are a bigger determinant of success or lack of success in charitable giving than anything else. It's kind of like you can have the greatest boat in the world. You can have your America's Cup boat, but if you've got no wind and no water, you're not going anywhere. So you can do all the asking you want to do, but your results are largely determined by bigger factors than your strategy, your asking, and what's going on in your office. That's not to say that you should discontinue asking at any time, but it's important to remember that certain times, certain years, certain months are better for giving than others are, and that's one of the things that we do at the Atlas, is we have the only reliable forecast for charitable giving in the U.S.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about that that forecast. Now, you had mentioned earlier that there's a growth in the sheer number of nonprofit organizations in the United States, up 50% in the last 12 years. Now, we've had Ken Berger from Charity Navigator here on the show a couple of times, and he always makes a point for the fact that, you know, Charity Navigator, as I'm sure you're aware, only analyzes a subset of the million plus nonprofit organizations here in the United States, which seems very small and would seem to be insignificant, except he overlays on that that the vast majority of money that is given in the United States actually goes to the top 5 to 10,000 charities. So just a small percentage of the charities in this country actually receive the lion's share of the donations. So even though there's been a large increase in the number of nonprofits, we still see a real concentration in where that money is going. How does that factor into the Atlas of Giving and the number of charities asking for money?
Well, obviously, Ken, and I know Ken, he actually has participated in our panel discussion following last year's announcement in New York. And yes, he's right. The money is concentrated in the top and largest charities in the U.S. However, when the base is growing, the tide is rising. So you've got, and many of these new small nonprofits will fail, but a number of them are going to succeed. And one of the trends that we're noting is that there seems to be a move towards more focused, more nimble, and more accountable nonprofits. And the example that I would give you is that cancer is a very big problem, and there are some very large organizations that are focused on that very large problem. But over recent years, there have been a rise in the number of nonprofits that pick a specific problem in the cancer space and build a new nonprofit around it. For example, the Multiple Myeloma Foundation. So while the American Cancer Society may take a very broad view of the big cancer problem, some people are going to be very attracted to solving one specific aspect of the cancer issue, like multiple myeloma. And that's true in other sectors as well. So I think, you know, the numbers of these new nonprofits, and yes, many of them will not survive. Many, if not most of them, won't survive. But what you have to remember is that when they're formed, they're out there raising money, and so the tide is rising in the charitable giving economy.
But so Go ahead.
It doesn't take away from the fact that there's still a huge concentration in the largest and oldest charities.
And so because it's so concentrated, do you see a diversification in the fundraising methods used by the largest charities, or is the innovation broadening or democratizing the fundraising in the United States?
There's some of both. I think larger organizations have more resources to try different innovative techniques, to try new analytical tools that smaller organizations may not have access to. But online giving has unquestionably made a huge impact in charitable giving overall. Online event support for larger organizations, direct mail, using direct mail for direct response request, social media, those things have been huge. And in terms of small new nonprofits, all you have to do is go to a crowdfunding site like Razoo and look at the thousands of causes that are represented there that are very specific, and some of them are pretty sizable. They're trying to solve a particular problem, and they're using social media and online tools to raise their money. And that can be true of large organizations and small organizations. And the beauty of the whole electronic fundraising process is that it's less expensive than some of our traditional methods of fundraising.
So the barrier to entry is lower now, and so the broadening base of nonprofits, while not necessarily receiving the largest gifts, are broadening the appeal of giving to charities?
Yes. No question about it. And, you know, there also are, for lack of a better term, fads. And so the way that I give money is very different from the way that my children give money. They're much more thoughtful than I had ever been in terms of doing their research, because they have today more tools online specifically to look things up, to see what their friends and other family members are doing, and that's making a big difference.
So that's the good news, and lots of factors came into play to make it possible for 2014 to grow by 9.3% for an all-time record of $456.73 billion given in the United States. So, Rob, the other part of the Atlas of Giving is your forecast and looking forward to 2015. I know all my listeners are, certainly sitting with bated breath on what should they be planning for 2015. What does 2015 look like?
The first warning I'll give is that this forecast that I'm about to tell you about is the first forecast for 2015. It will change. It will definitely change. As you may know, we update our forecast based on changing factors in the economy, changing events, changing demographics. We update our forecast each month, so it's very important to keep updated. And our forecast rolls ahead 12 months at a time, so you're able to look at the calendar year each month and up to 12 months in the future. What our forecast shows for 2015, our initial forecast, is that giving is actually going to decline from 2014 levels a little more than 3%.
Now, that's significant. How would my listeners make use of that information?
Well, one of the things that's interesting to note is that what we're looking at today, and our forecast, again, like any forecast, it's kind of like if you go to check today's weather, the forecast for tomorrow is generally going to be very accurate. The forecast for the next 5 days is going to be less accurate, but still pretty good. 10 days, still good, not as good as just looking at tomorrow. Our forecast is like that. So the further out we go, the less accurate we become. The reason that it's important to check in and look at the changing forecast each month is because stuff happens. In 2001, just as an example, the giving year was shaping up to be pretty good. And then 9/11 occurred. And what we know now is that giving to non-disaster charities pretty much dried up for 6 months before it came roaring back. So for a practitioner, one of the things you can look at in our forecast, if you are nimble enough to pull this off, and that's very key, is you can look month by month over the coming 12 months and choose when you'd like to solicit based on when the environment is going to be the best, is forecast to be the best. An example I would give you, and again, it requires you to be nimble, but if you look at our forecast, and if your big direct mail drop of the year is usually in November, and you look at our forecast and you see that, gosh, August is a much more favorable, has a much more favorable giving forecast than November does, it would be beneficial to you. Maybe you don't take your whole file, but you take a portion of your file and move it to the earlier time frame to take advantage of more favorable giving conditions at that time. So that's one very practical way people can use that. What's unfortunate, and I put myself in this category, is that those of us who've been practitioners are, in a sense, married to tradition. So if the gala has always been the third Saturday in October, we're very reluctant to change it to the third Saturday in September simply because we know we can raise more money. There are other factors involved. So you've got to be very deliberate about how you make your plans for strategically for fundraising through the year. But the good news is we've now got a tool that you can use and test against to increase your effectiveness in fundraising. And that is a reliable forecast.
And in looking at this, obviously, yeah, as you say in your report, 2015 forecast is bleak at best. But the caution that you provided earlier, I think if I understand it correctly, is that fundraising is not all that elastic. So bad news is going to decline even if it moderates to not so bad news. It's not necessarily going to snap back. So the difference between September and October, if the bad news came, in August, is not necessarily going to benefit you.
That's correct. And, you know, in terms of bleak, I got corrected by Doug White last week at Columbia, who said, you know, here's the way to think about it. Since we've had tremendous growth in giving over the last few years, and we're looking at a slight correction, look at it the same way you might look at the stock market. A correction occurs occasionally in the stock market. If this initial forecast actually comes to be, then 3.2% decline over the largest giving total in American history from 2014, when you put it in perspective, is not necessarily that bleak. It's just a decline from the previous year. And it's a big swing, growth percentage-wise, but from a money perspective, not that big in terms of a planning tool. And so we all want to better our best. Go ahead.
You might want to view it more as sort of a correction. And I think for most nonprofit organizations, of course, they tend to be optimistic people, and they tend to want to see trend lines go in one direction, and that's up. And I think, what you might be pointing out here is that's not entirely realistic, and so understanding where the corrections are coming can help you weather them better than maybe other organizations might.
Absolutely, and a great example of it was this last recession. You could have been having even with the signs of the coming recession in 2007, 2008 for optimistic organizations could have been very good until the stock market really corrected in October, and then, as we know, things got bad very quickly. So, I think it's important. We like to say we're keeping our finger on the pulse of American philanthropy, and what we're concerned about is the velocity and the trajectory of giving, and that's what we're monitoring. How has giving been doing, and where is it going?
Now, if I'm looking at your report correctly, you're predicting that year over year, fundraising or giving will actually be above 2014 as we get through 2015 up until May. And then you see the divergence starting to take place from May and certainly over the summer. And by the time fall comes around, you're really going to be feeling it.
Yes, and it's important to remember that chart that you're looking at is month over month. So, yes, you're right. Giving for January, February, March, April, and May will be better than each of those months was in 2014. But what we're showing now is starting June, month over month giving over the same period previous year will be less than it was. And that includes June through December.
So here on the Nonprofit Coach, of course, we're always looking for practical applications, and that's part of what we get with the Atlas of Giving. And so is it practical for my listeners to take away from this that to the extent that it's possible and to the extent that it's practical to front-load your fundraising in 2015 rather than counting on a big finish November, December 2015?
It absolutely is, and in fact, if I were still a practitioner, that's what I would be looking to do, is getting moving very quickly to move my fundraising resources and budget up further in the year to have the best results. And, you know, it's interesting you point out year-end giving. I wrote a blog which has been gotten a lot of attention about the year-end giving bonanza being a bit of a myth. And it's one of the things that I've learned through this study of the charitable giving economy is that lots of organizations wait until the last quarter of the year, or even the last month of the year, to deploy all their fundraising resources and solicitation. And they're doing so at a time when competition is at its most intense. The great direct mail guru Mal Warrick, when asked once, would you mail this month? He said, yes, I'd mail this month. I would mail next month. I'll mail in any month as long as the conditions are right. It's there usually is a bit of a bump in year-end giving, but it is typically not very significant when you consider the entire charitable giving economy. Most of that has become sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Lots of organizations do most of their asking in the last quarter, and they're missing opportunities to get in front of people at times when there's a lot less competition, like the summer. So, yes, I think practitioners...
Statistics show that one of the lowest direct mail months is August. And it always occurred to me, why would you not want to be big time in August and leave the competition to duke it out in other months? I'm watching the clock here. We have about 15 minutes left, and I did want to get deeper into your forecast. I found it interesting when you look at the sector summary that everyone will end the year at a lower point except nature and environment, and I'm wondering if there's any story there.
There is a story there. I think the telltale is that the more we hear about something on the news, the more people respond. Now, it's important to remember that in terms of environmental giving as a sector, it's one of the smaller sectors. It's about 5% of total sector giving. But when you hear about climate change on the news and environmental issues constantly, more and more people are motivated to do something. And so I think that is a motivational factor in environmental giving. And, you know, the amount that we're initially forecasting environmental giving to be up is it's very slight. I would almost call it flat. But you're right. The other sectors are projected to be down more than that particular sector.
And where the money comes from looks like that's going to stay pretty stable. So it's going to be a smaller pie, but the safer bet, I suppose, is still on fundraising to individuals.
Well, that's the biggest pot. I would say, as a practitioner, one of the things you should look at is, because of the ramp up in stock market assets, one of the things that's going to remain strong for at least 2 years are foundation grants. So if you're able to deploy resources toward seeking foundation grants, the next 2 years should continue to be very good. Because, as you know, foundations are required to give away 5% of their assets. But the way the reporting periods work, it's not in the same year because of the reporting period. So many foundations will be giving away in grants next year was based on how their portfolio did in the year or two before.
Exactly. And so that probably, at least from your perspective, is a little bit more predictable. A higher stock market provides more opportunities for foundations, but yet we don't see that portion of the overall giving pie changing. And I suppose that's because when it's good news for foundations, it's good news for everybody else too.
Well, it's good news for foundations, but as you well know, foundation giving in terms of the big proportional pie is still only going to be in the 14 or 15% range. So that's it's completely overcome by individual giving at 74%. So, you know, go where the most money is and go where the best opportunity is. And I think all of this speaks to the fact that it's important for lots of organizations to consider a balance in their fundraising portfolio so that during times when the market's good and other things are bad, they're somewhat insulated. It's the analogy that I would use as a balanced portfolio for your individual investments. It's kind of the same thing.
And where you are in the country seems to matter as well, although I caution my comments to note that we're dealing with very small fractions of a percent difference. But I did find it notable that one of the only places in the country that looks like it's not going to come to a screeching halt by the end of 2015 is California.
And it's a very large economy in California, and so that's I don't have any commentary as to why that is forecast to occur, but other than the size of the California economy by itself.
Now, you mentioned that as part of the reason why there was such good news in 2014 was lower gas prices, which seems to be a trend that at least most of us are surprised is continuing. Is it likely that that will affect revisions to the forecast that could alter the terms of your forecast?
It certainly could, because paying a dollar less per gallon for gas is like giving every American and every American corporation a raise. So there's more discretion. Suddenly we're waking up to more money in our bank account and less credit card charges on our credit card. And so that's discretionary money that people can use for all sorts of things, including giving.
So is this a potential, you made it very clear that this is sort of a moving target. but yet the bleak forecast for year-end 2015 seems a little bit more hard-baked. Do you see that potentially altering, and do you think there is a chance that 2015 might surpass 2014? Or is it just a variable of how much lower it would be?
Some of the things that are baked into the forecast are a rise in interest rates in the second half of the year, some sort of correction in the stock market, and those are two very important things. If those things and other things that are baked into the forecast currently do not occur, then yes, 2015 could be a better year than 2014.
And your forecast is based on economists suggesting that those two very important variables that you just pointed out are very likely to happen, or that is the best guess at this point for most economists?
Well, because of the factors that we use in our algorithms, we, of course, subscribe to a number of economic forecasts. And just as an example, market forecasting is difficult. I think anyone would tell you that if you try to time the market, you're not being very smart. But our best forecast for 2014 at the beginning of the year was also expecting a market correction, and it did not occur in any significant way. So that was good news for giving. And we can only hope that the initial forecast this year will bring some of that good news as well. But right now, I think most economists and market watchers and experts are expecting some form of market correction this year.
So, again, back to sort of using that analogy. So for listeners and those who are reading the Atlas of Giving to, you know, potentially – position their organizations to weather the storm, just as you might in your investments, you might hedge for 2015 by front-loading your fundraising before May. And even if things and then if things get better, then you've set yourself up for an even better 2015 than you might have hoped for. And if this forecast does come to pass, just as it's outlined, then you've hedged the downfall of October through December.
Right. You've gained market share, as we'd say.
Well, potentially.
You've done what others haven't.
Depending on how much your competitors listen to the Nonprofit Coach and get Atlas of Giving.
Exactly.
So wrapping up the we've got about 5 minutes left here, Rob. I want to ask you to cover aspects of the Atlas of Giving that we have not gotten a chance to cover. For instance, I was interested that even though you're viewing the early part of 2015, certainly as we've mentioned, January through May is likely to or is forecast in the Atlas of Giving to be above 2014 levels, nonetheless, marginally lower. You found that December giving was down fractionally from November. So was that the beginning of a caution, or was that just, as it shows, almost a rounding error?
It was yes, you're right. I mean, from November 2014 to December 2014, there was less money given in December than there was in November, largely a function, if you remember, there were some stock market flutters at that time, and what we know now is that the fourth quarter of GDP slowed down considerably from the third quarter. So those things enter into the equation, and it's like I said before, we can be aggressive, we can use great strategy, great technique in our fundraising, but if there isn't enough water to float on, we'll only be so successful. And so it's a bit and this past year was a little different than most years. As I say, most years, unless there's an extraordinary event, year-end giving typically goes up a bit from the previous year. But or from the previous months, but it isn't as dramatic a rise as people might think. And one thing to throw in here anecdotally is that the top 10 largest gifts made in the U.S. in 2014 were all made prior to the fourth quarter. So when you think about the disproportional size of those gifts, you know, those things make a difference. And there definitely are people who are motivated at year end for a variety of reasons to give, but the effect, the competition, all those factors enter into year end giving.
Yeah, and I think year end giving, as you mentioned, is a bit of a misnomer in that that's when you're going to get your growth, because I think it's more a tale of concentration of giving and habit of giving, but it doesn't necessarily predict in any way, and certainly you're not predicting for 2015, and you didn't find it in 2014, that is the month that you're going to have your increase.
Correct. It's primarily a function of economics. When things happen economically, or events, 9/11 being a great example of that, or October through December of 2008 being another example.
So the wise fundraiser, again, is going to front load fundraising in 2015, weather the storm in the back half of 2015, or set their organization up with that exact same strategy for a tremendous boost in giving, because they'll go into their third and fourth quarter already having, maybe perhaps, if they're smart, making their budget.
Yes.
So
if I were sitting behind the practitioner desk, that's what I would do.
Oh, great. Well, what else have we potentially missed today? And then as we wrap up the show, and again, Rob, thank you so much. There's so much wealth of information, and I think, you know, it's one of the few sources, and certainly anybody can debate, you know, any set of data, but at least this is a solid, educated approach to trying to help in both forecasting and understanding prior giving. So two things in 3 minutes. What did we miss that you wanted to cover, and how can my listeners reach you?
The easiest way for listeners to reach us is go to atlasofgiving.com. And the one thing I would stress is we give these monthly reports away that show how giving is doing and what the updated forecast is. That new report comes out around the 25th of each month. And so it's important to check back at atlasofgiving.com, and the report is free. There's absolutely no cost or obligation to it. You simply provide your email address, and we make a promise that we're not deluging you with all sorts of offers. And we just let you know when things are important and that you should be paying attention to. And then also on our website, for less than $200, an organization can go in and answer six simple questions about their giving and where their gifts come from and the geography that they're operating in, and get a 12-month forecast for their organization. And it's a great thing. And then you can check back, and as the information is updated each month, you can check back in each month and see how your forecast has changed.
I can't thank you enough, and I certainly draw everybody's attention to the Atlas of Giving, a fantastic program today. We wish you well in all of your work, and just, again, a reminder for my listeners, we will be live here on the Nonprofit Coach next week, and our guests will be Linda Lysakowski and Lynn Dean, and they will be here to talk to us about nonprofit strategic planning. Thank you for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcasts at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.